Welcome to the Black Tower Podcast, a Wheel of Time podcast. I'm Greg.
And I'm Thorn.
And today, of course, we're going to talk about Robert Jordan's The Wheel of Time. Now, if you tuned in last week, you heard us begin discussing the outlying cultures in the world of The Wheel of Time. And we had started discussing the Shan Chan. And I think we are going to revisit that culture this week and continue to discuss some things that we didn't get to go quite as in-depth on last week. But as always, you know, we've got a bit of a spoiler warning here. So, Thorn?
This podcast will contain spoilers for Robert Jordan's The Wheel of Time. If you have not read Robert Jordan's The Wheel of Time, please stop here.
And I will reinforce that by saying the whole thing. The whole thing.
Okay. So this week, we're talking about the One Power in Shan Chan specifically. Mm-hmm. Because that is a huge part that we did not... We covered a little bit, but not nearly enough.
I mean, we kind of stuck our toe in it a little bit. You know, we didn't really go through as much. And then we, you know, if any of you guys listened last week, you found out that Thorn and Greg forget names a lot. You know, we were reaching, we even had show notes up and we're forgetting things. But I think we're a little more on top of it tonight. So in the way of that, Thorn, speaking of the One Power in Shan Chan, how best to approach it? What do we want to start with?
I think we should just go right into Damani. Mm-hmm. So Damani are women who can channel. Damani specifically means leashed ones. They're basically treated as animals and are kept on a silvery metal leash called an Adam. The Adam actually allows a Soldom, which is a type of trainer for Damani, to control them. Mm-hmm. This is, I think, the biggest problem people have with the Shan Chan.
Oh,
and
sure.
I agree. It's what people absolutely hate about Shan Chan, and just they're like, I hate the Shan Chan because of this. And I understand that part. I actually love the Shan Chan as a people, but they're, what's it called? Their thoughts on channelers are very problematic.
Well,
and they should change.
Well, and there's a couple of things I want to comment about that, and the biggest one being is it's not just, you know, the fans that have a problem with the Shan Chan in terms of their treatment of women channelers, you know, who we would, you know, normally refer to as Aes Sedai, you know. It's not just us, though. That's everyone's problem with the Shan Chan in the books. I mean, literally, you know, Rand and all, you know, all the characters, basically, if it boils down to it, they're saying, you know, what's your biggest problem with the Shan Chan? Well, I don't like the way they leash Damani. I don't like the way they treat their female or male channelers, for that matter, because they just kill those guys. I mean, you know, that's basically the summation of everyone's problem with Shan Chan, that and the fact that they think they have a claim to the world, but, you know, that kind of gets a little rectified.
They're really good leaders. Mm-hmm. The Shan Chan are very good to their people. And the only, like, if you're in Shan Chan and you're not a channeler, you're going to have a pretty decent life.
Oh, for sure.
You're probably not going to go hungry. You're going to be able to farm your crops, live your life, as long as you don't do anything illegal and you're not a channeler.
Now, the first time we were ever introduced to this concept is the same time we're actually introduced to the Shan Chan, and that's in The Great Hunt. Now, more specifically, again, spoilers for the whole series, so if you're only an eye of the world, what are you doing here? The thing with the Shan Chan and Great Hunt, for example, what vilifies them so quickly is the fact that, you know, Dark Friends, Black Aja, Aes Sedai, basically turn over Egwene and Nynaeve and Elaine and Min, which a couple of them do get away, but a couple of them are captured and leashed.
I think that only Egwene is captured.
I thought all four of them went. Well, okay, so I know Min got away, and I know Elaine got away.
All four of them left. Egwene was immediately caught on a leash. Mm-hmm. But as soon as Elaine and Nynaeve figured that out, they were like, we're outie. Oh, no, wait, Min was captured.
Yes, okay, that's what
but
it is.
But she's not a channeler, so she didn't.
Mm-hmm. Right.
She was able to pretty much come and go as she pleased.
So in any case, the treatment of women who can channel by the Shan Chan is very much shown in The Great Hunt. And it's one of the first things you see from the Shan Chan. So obviously it's one of the things that sticks. It definitely sticks and it leaves a mark. We see Egwene get captured and Min as well. But like we said, Min's not a channeler. She was on Aes Sedai, so she was not leashed. So we see Egwene get leashed, and she gets a Sul'dahm, who is, like Thorne was saying, the leash holder or the trainer, and literally being treated like a dog, you know, and the way these
Actually, I think that just, like, I think Egwene's experience is the best thing that we can talk about. Mm-hmm. Because we get a point of view from her and how she feels during all of this. Mm-hmm. And, yeah, they punish them through the ADOM like you would a dog. Like, I would probably maybe kind of like a shock collar would be the best description.
It's similar, yeah.
Because it doesn't physically hurt them so much, but they feel pain.
Right. And it in the way they've got it situated is so the collar goes around the woman's neck, the Demane's neck, and then the other end is fastened to the Sul'dahm's wrist, typically. And then
yes, and if it's not on the Sul'dahm's wrist, like if it's just like hanging or on the ground, then the Demane cannot move it without feeling like sick. So, like, they don't even have to, like, tie them up or anything. They just have to leave it hanging on a hook. And if you try to move past a certain feet away, then you're going to start throwing up sick.
Yeah, and that was very, very vividly shown with Egwene whenever she would try to move around when she was in. Because all her Sul'dahm would do is literally just hang the other end of the ADOM on a peg by the door. And if Egwene went or did anything that she wasn't supposed to, then it's like Thorne just said, she would get sick. She would, you know, feel terrible. It would have an adverse effect on her. And then
another thing about the, sorry, another adverse effect of the ADOM is if Demane are not allowed to use weapons against themselves or against their Sul'dahm. And if they think of anything as a weapon, then it will cause them to be unable to even touch it. Like, there's a part where Egwene thinks about using a water vase to knock her Sul'dahm over the head with, and she wasn't able to touch it for a long time afterwards because of it.
Needless to say, whoever actually invented the ADOM was super sadistic and super thorough.
Yes.
And like we said, this is the main thing that puts a bad taste in people's mouth for the Shan Chan, because it did the same with me. The more I learned about their culture, the more I liked them as a whole, but I have to kind of be in line with everybody else where I say, that's the one part of the Shan Chan I don't like that. I don't like it at all. And, you know, and it's
the worst part about the collars is that, like, if you haven't read the book, then you might be thinking, like, why not just take off the collar? There has to be a way to put it on, so you have to be able to take it off. But Demane cannot even touch the button to release it on their collar without, again, feeling pain and sickness. Like, they can't even think about trying to do it. They can touch their collar itself, but the moment that they think about unlocking it, it causes revulsion in them.
Right.
It is an insane, disgusting device.
And we find out that there are such things as ADOM for male channelers, though not as common. but this is a pretty big plot point in the books concerning Rand and his development as the Dragon Reborn, and of course the Forsaken's plans for him. And you know, we don't have to go into that whole subplot, but needless to say, there was created for both men and women a Aedom. So, but it was the women that they, you know, again, because of the taint on the, you know, on the one power, the men of
Ishmael crazy. Actually think that the male Aedom was the male Aedom was not made by the Seanchan. They got it in the palace when they were looking for Leandrin. Afterwards, there was a palace that they went to, and that's where it was. They didn't know what it was. It was just like on display. And I think Nynaeve ended up stealing it because she felt like it was evil. And later they tried to get Eginin to throw it into the ocean, and that's how the Seanchan got a hold of it.
Right. But I think at the same time, whoever initially created the Aedom, I mean, because we assume that the Seanchan created the Aedom, especially for the women. So if the Seanchan themselves didn't create it for men, then it was at least the Seanchan's design that was adapted. So the Seanchan are still kind of responsible for its creation, because someone looked at that, what they were doing with the Demani, and said, aha, well, I wonder if we can do that with men too. Probably. Let's try it. So,
yeah, unless it was made, I think it was, it's something really old. Like, not many people can make Tarangriel. Mm-hmm. Like, the only character that we know for sure out of the books who can make them is Elaine. Mm-hmm. And hers are not perfect, even. Hers are far from perfect, actually. They usually have, like, a major flaw to them. But I think that the Seanchan kind of have to have some ability to make Tarangriel. Because you have the Aedom, and they have to have enough for however many women they need it for. And then there's also the Blood Knives rings.
Mm-hmm. Oh, those things are vicious.
Because those are Tarangriel, and I don't think they get them back most of the time after.
Oh, I would say not, especially because the majority of the time when they're used, it's essentially for suicide missions. So, you know.
Who's looking at you, Gawain? But,
but.
Gawain the idiot.
Oh, Lord. Is this where we rant about Gawain? Are we going to rant about Gawain? Let's rant about Gawain. So, this dude, y'all, I couldn't get over it when I was reading A Memory of Light. I couldn't get over it. This bro puts on, how many rings did he put on Thorne? Like four?
He had three, but I think he only put on one.
I thought he put on the other two just before he decided to go try to be big hero. Because he put one on initially.
I don't know. Gawain's an idiot.
Yeah. He put one on initially, and then I think I remember reading where he slipped the other two on because he was about to go try to kill someone in the battle. And I remember, you know, when
he was trying to kill Demandred.
Mm-hmm. Old freaking, what's his name now? Bow.
Yeah, let's go and try to kill one of the freaking Forsaken by myself, even though I'm not. He's technically a sword master, but he's not that great, honestly. I mean, he got his ass handed to him by Matt. I mean, so did Galad, but at least Galad has actually. We've actually watched Galad mm-hmm. fight another Blade Master. We never actually watched Gawain fight a Blade right. Master.
And that's kind of the thing, too, is he puts these rings on, and he's thinking, I guess he's thinking to himself, probably going to die anyway. Let's put these jokers on. I'm going to go take out Demandred. And Demandred,
I think his original plan was to assassinate Demandred. But of course, he fucked that up.
Well, he gets out there, and Demondred's like, "Ha, that's cute. You think I couldn't find you?" You know, he's just up there bell firing everything, and then Gawain shows up, and he's just like, "Oh, look, the idiot." And I was like, "Well, we agree on something, Demondred." But in any case, the Seanchan have
and Gawain's stupidity. What? does not just affect him. Mm-hmm. I mean, like, his death caused issues for Egwene. And then Galad, feeling like he needed to avenge his brother, tried to go after Demondra too and lost a hand. Mm-hmm. I mean, like, Gawain does not think about anything other than himself. He does not think about how his actions affect other people.
And I just have to say about Demondra in the last battle that the whole time I was reading the parts where people were coming against him and basically getting, you know, yoked through the ceiling, was when, you know, you've seen that video clip that people use now where it's just a guy walking through a party and just slapping everyone. And just everyone that comes across his path, it just slaps him, slaps this person, slaps a kid, slaps. That's what Demondred was doing. He was just like, Gawain, slap. Galad, slap. Lan, slap. And then Lan comes back. Well, and then, fight. I mean, he just everybody that they threw at him, he was just like, slap, 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 slap. I'm sorry, is this the best you have? Slap, slap, slap. And I'm just like, dear God.
I don't feel like he smacked down Lan because Lan's the one who killed him. But you know that meme with that JoJo meme where it's like, oh, so you've come to me?
Yes.
And people have put that as Demondra and
Lan. I just started watching that anime. It's so crazy.
I only know memes.
Oh my God. Well, the memes make so much more sense now. You're just so...
The memes are so funny. So
over the top. Like, Jeff, you're going to get a lot of shout outs on this podcast, even though you're not going to listen to it. But JoJo's Bizarre Adventure, anime fans who also read and like Wheel of Time, if you've not seen it, go watch it. At least watch the first few episodes because it is just – it is bizarre. It's not bizarre in the sense that you can't stand to watch it. It's just so over the top, like in true – like because the story started in the 80s. The anime is not that old, but the manga started in the 80s, and you can tell that's when it started because it is so over the top. But, yes, that meme that they put with Demondred and Lan where it's the two talking, it's 100%.
The whole show is like that. So you're going to come to me, and it's like – I can't kick your ass without getting any closer.
Pretty much. That's pretty much what it was. But needless to say, we bring all this stuff up in the last battle because, you know, these devices that these Seanchan made. Look, the Seanchan are smart, okay? These guys have all kind of weapons, all kind of creatures that nobody else uses. They just show up unannounced, and they just start kicking tail all over the place. And honestly, I have to kind of applaud them on their planning and their ingenuity, even if I don't like the way they used it. Like, you know, the Adam, like, definitely don't like that. Don't like the Adam. And then come to find out, though, interesting piece of information here about the Seanchan that everyone knows is a major plot point in the series later, is that the Suldam are also at least a little bit... they can at least have a little bit of ability to channel. So basically,
well, what it is not that they have that. Okay, there's two types of women in mm-hmm. the books who can channel. There's women who have the innate ability, like Egwene and Nynaeve, and I think Elaine also, who are born with the ability and that they're going to channel regardless whether they want to or not. And then there's a second time who are women who can learn to channel. And that's also our difference between Demane and Suldam. Demane are women who have the innate ability and are going to channel regardless. And Suldam are women who can learn to channel. And that's how they're able to use the Adam.
Boom. There it is. But that's a pretty big reveal, though, because the whole point of the Adam is because of the Seanchan's view of women who can channel, of any type of channeler. And I would think that goes all the way back to Alter Hawkwing's actual view on Aes Sedai, because he hated the Aes Sedai, and he wanted them gone, and then he tried to laid siege to Tar Valon and didn't work. He didn't beat them. So Hawkwing was notorious for not liking the Aes Sedai. And I'm pretty sure that hatred.
And I'm sure that passed on to his
and
son.
And then when they found out, they more than likely what happened was then they found that they had women channelers instead of casting them out or letting them make their own order or whatever. They just decided to subdue them. And at first it was probably in the name of security and protection. And then they learned they could use these women as weapons. So essentially the Demane have multiple uses, but they but they are mostly used as weapons, and they, you know, send them ahead of.
That's because the weaves for destruction weaves are a lot easier to learn. And with other things, they have to kind of have the talent for it. Like, there is one Demane that Tuon has that we talked about last week who can do fortune telling. Right. And then whenever they found out that Egwene could sense ore, they don't use those Demane for fighting because
they're pretty valuable.
Finding ore is right. valuable.
I think the majority of them are used for fighting because it's easier. Yes. But when they do, you're right. When they do find other uses for the Demane, they'll say, "Hey, let's put her aside because we need her to go over here and see if we can find something to mine or whatever their talent is." But in discussing all of this, you know, about the Suldam having some ability to channel in one capacity or the other, it kind of lends itself to the idea that in order for an Aedom to work, you have to have a channeler on each end of the Aedom, one that's being subservient to the other who also has an ability to channel. That's what it suggests to us anyway.
Yes, that's exactly it. Although the way that Tuon puts it is that she chooses not to channel. Because somebody is using an Aedom doesn't mean that they have the ability to actually right. channel. Because there's a part where after Matt had kidnapped Tuon and was traveling with her in the menagerie, one of the Suldam actually full-on started channeling. And that's when the Aes Sedai were like, you know what? We've got to train you so you are no longer a danger to yourself or other people. So it's not like it's not like they learned to channel just by using the Aedom, but there has to be that spark.
And that kind of makes sense if you think about it, especially with the type of item that is, you know, that somebody on each end would have a maybe unknown ability, at least on one part, but there's a link of the power between the two through the Aedom to a degree. I feel like that really informs how it works. Now, as far as people who can't channel, non-channelers, these things don't do anything to them. You know, there's no.
Yeah, it's like a pretty piece of jewelry.
Right,
it
has no effect on, you know, neither men or women who can't channel.
Although with men who can channel, it causes pain to both the Demane and the channeler, I think. I can't remember if a male channeler gets harmed from touching it. I've got to Google this now.
I think it does, especially because help me remember rightly,
I want to say Ran may have touched one at some point.
Isn't that what Simarog put around his neck?
No, that was a male Aedom. They're different.
Oh, you're talking about a female Aedom.
I'm talking about
got
a female
it, got it. I was talking about Aedom just kind of in general. But yeah,
Wearing the bracelet of an Aedom causes intense pain to a male channeler and would usually kill him. No experimentation was done regarding a woman wearing a bracelet and a man wearing the necklace. But it might well have done the same thing. Touching an Aedom worn by a woman would cause pain to both the woman and the man so that the male channeler cannot open the collar and free a Demane by physically touching it. So they cannot really even touch when a male channeler attempts to free a Demane on a leash, all three experience immense pain. So if a male channeler tries to touch one of the collars, the male channeler will feel pain, the Demane will feel pain, and so will the Suldam.
Well, that's just a bad time for everybody.
Yeah, it was Rand who touched it.
God.
Yeah, it says he and, in little things, Rand, put a hand to the collar of the nearest and felt a jolt that nearly numbed his arm. For an instant, the voice shifted, and sighting rage through him like a snowstorm a thousandfold. Mm. The Damani's short yellow hair flailed as she convulsed at his touch. So it's more painful for the Damani. And the Sildan connected to her also gasped, her face going white. And it says they both would have fallen if not held by bonds of air.
Mm. However, we see a non-channeling man free some Damani, Mr. Matt Coffin. And he's okay. So
it yeah.
more than likely, again, won't do anything to anyone who does not have any kind of, you know, ability in the one power, either side.
And actually, sometimes they play a game with men in Shan Chan. It's like a cruel joke. And they'll have a man put on the bracelet and see if he has a reaction. And if he doesn't, it's no big deal. But if he does have a reaction, then he either dies from touching it or he gets killed afterwards, because that pretty much confirms that he can channel.
Pretty much. And that is pretty, I mean, as interesting as a Shan Chan are, what is even more intriguing to me is the fact that for just about every cool thing I can pick out about the Shan Chan, there's at least one or two very heavy things weighed against them. And it all has to do with one power. Anything to do with the Shan Chan and the one power is just bad and wrong. You know, when it comes to the way they treat anyone and everyone connected to channeling whatever the one power, they're just, no, Shan Chan, not the people you want to talk to about channeling, for sure, because they will.
Yeah. And something we forgot to mention, women who can channel but are not already on a leash are referred to Marith Damani, or those who must be leashed.
Right.
So any Aes Sedai, Wise Ones, Sea Folk, Windfinders, they're all considered to the Shan Chan Marith Damani, and they want to collar them.
And in the thing about it is, too, is whenever they interact with Aes Sedai and they're not in a position where they're trying to take them, which does happen sometimes in the series where they have to actually converse with the Aes Sedai, especially later in the series when things are getting closer to the last battle, you know, they would be talking about these things, but they always refer to the Aes Sedai contemptuously as Marith Damani. You know, they always, you know, they say, why do we have to listen to these Marith Damani? And you can just almost like just.
They also won't talk directly to an Aes Sedai.
Right. And that also goes back to kind of how their class structure is, because you're not going to address, because they obviously see women and men, but definitely women who can channel as someone who's got to be below them and contained and, like, you know, like we've been talking about tonight, chained up and leashed and controlled. So obviously the worst person, the worst type of person to be in Shan Chan is a Damani, from everything I'm able to gather.
Yeah, if you can channel, you don't want to be.
You really don't. Which, you know, there are some other areas of, you know, the world at large where if you can channel, you don't want to be around. The majority of the world was at least hostile toward male channelers. And depending on which country you're in, it went anywhere from supportive and standing behind Aes Sedai to, you know, prosecuting channeling by law, you know, differences between Camelon and Tyr and Ilion and all those places. But none of them did what Shan Chan did, which is leash them and use them. That stays with the Shan Chan for sure.
Yeah.
Now, since we're still kind of talking about everything to do with the Shan Chan themselves, you know, there's so many different things we can talk about, and we could really, honestly, hammer our opinions, you know, over and over and over again about the, you know, the Demone and all of that, those things tonight. But there's a couple other things I think that are interesting, or a few other things that are interesting that we may want to bring up. And one is the Seanchan are extremely, extremely superstitious, like stupidly superstitious. And they love, I say love, but they are always looking for omens, like in everything, everywhere. Like just when I thought, you know, they wouldn't see anything in something, you know, Tuon or any other, you know, put Seanchan name here would speak of some omen they saw.
Mostly Tuon or Salisha.
Yeah, it was mostly through them. But there's,
since we spend a lot of time with them specifically.
And so they're extremely superstitious. And I feel like at least some of them kind of came true. I don't know. I can't remember if all of the omens that Tuon or, and whoever else saw.
Some of them I've noticed are actually very, like, to bring up one, an owl hooting at dawn or hooting two times is a prediction of death. That's something that my mother-in-law believes.
Whoa, really?
Yes. So these aren't just... And an albatross being a symbol of victory, that's an actual, like, if you dream about an albatross, it's supposed to be something good is going to happen.
I guarantee you the majority of people don't even know what an albatross is.
It's a big bird. It's basically a seagull.
Yeah, it's a huge...
It's a seagull. It's
a big seagull. That's what it is. A big seabird is what it is. Which, this doesn't surprise me that these these omens... are based on, more than likely based on, cultural superstitions we find in our own world, because obviously Robert Jordan had a lot of material to pull from and a lot of inspiration. So while that's...
Speaking of just funny superstitions, my mother-in-law, whenever I was pregnant, my husband and I decided to get cats. And the first thing my mother-in-law told me was, or told my husband was, they suck out baby souls. Oh,
man,
which is absolutely ridiculous. What it is that back in the day they believed that because whenever a cat sees something warm, they like to lay on it, and babies are usually kept pretty warm. So most of the time, whenever babies would randomly die when somebody had a cat, it was because the cat was trying to get warm and accidentally suffocated the baby. So remember, always supervise baby pet playtime.
Always. Doesn't matter how friendly your pet is. Always watch your kids.
Especially if they're friendly. Because they don't know what they're doing. They just lay down and they're just like, yeah, this is a nice warm spot. And
so
just lay down.
What are some of these other ones we've got on here? So, birds circling overhead more than once. Apparently, that means a storm's coming. A bird entering in. A lot of birds on here. A lot of stuff with birds.
I think that's mostly because the Seanchan are represented by birds, specifically being ravens.
So, a bird entering indoors during the day is an extremely bad omen, the evil of which is averted by a night. In prayer and contemplation. So in other words, it's not just say a prayer and move on. It's like, no, you're not sleeping tonight. You are staying up, you are praying, and you are contemplating your life. Like if there's a bird inside your house, like that is a crazy bad omen. Like I just picked that one randomly out of this list and I'm just like, ooh, I'm bad.
That would also be like, you know, whenever you go to like Walmart or something and there's just a bird inside.
Mm-hmm.
Because this says a bird entering indoors during the day. Mm-hmm. So that could be anywhere. Right.
Now there is this one's weird, but it's because it's really specific. Two dead rats on their back, one with a tail in the other's mouth. Apparently this is one of the worst omens that you can see. It's like spine tingling, like alarm. And we don't necessarily know what it entails. It just means something very bad is going to happen, but it's super specific because these others are kind of, I'm not saying none of these are specific, but it's like, you know, a bird inside during the day, you know, okay, That's the thing. You know, birds circling overhead more than once. Storms approaching. You see Dream of have an albatross, symbol of victory. But that this one's like an equation. It's like you have to have two dead rats, both on their back. One has to have its tail in the other's mouth. It's like there's a plus plus equals here. And that one was just really, really, was really weird to me.
I think that if we had more Sean Chan omens, we would have more that are that ridiculously specific. Mm-hmm. But then again, there's one down here that says a new spring rose dropping 3 petals.
That's pretty specific.
And that's an omen of great victory.
And you have to think, I'll be honest, I don't pay attention to stuff like this ever. Like if there's an owl hooting at dawn or hooting 2 times, ooh, an owl, that's my reaction. You know, an albatross, I mean, any of this stuff, if I saw any of this stuff around me, and I feel like the majority of the people in the books outside of the Sean Chan are the same way. It's just like, no big deal. But the Sean Chan, it's like the Sean Chan are like, they're looking for these things. They're always watching. And we see two on, it's like every other, you know, I won't say every other chapter, but every few encounters we have with Tuon in the books, she's talking about some omen that she saw, or either her or Solution.
I think that this one that's on the last of our list, the peach blossoms, the most powerful omen known, I believe that's part of the reason why she decided to listen to Rand, because whenever he met with her the second time, and he was being a little bit, a lot less honorary is the word that comes to mind.
After he had his Dragon Mount epiphany.
Okay, so Matt mentions that he was singing, and I didn't notice it the first time I read through, but I'm pretty sure that Rand, with Luce Theron's memories, knows how to tree sing.
Dude, I think you're right. Oh, crud. I don't remember that.
Because whenever he was, it seems like every time they think that he's muttering under his breath, and then something crazy happens, like trees mm-hmm. grow or plants around Rand start yeah. growing. It's not the pattern that's doing that. It's Rand himself. He is actually putting the effort forth, and he is actually singing, and he's just doing it under his breath so nobody can hear it, nobody can tell what he's doing, so he seems like this mysterious and awesome figure. Although tree singing is amazing in itself, but I think that if Loyal ever heard it, that he would have recognized it immediately. Loyal would have freaked out.
He would have freaked. Now, I'm putting this in my book.
I think it would have made him very happy.
Oh yeah, too. But he still would have spazzed.
Loyal's very good at spazzing.
I just have Michael Kramer's voice for Loyal in my head right now. Ryan, you can sing? I mean, it's such a good job as Loyal. But yeah, that is crazy. But that would play a big factor into Tuon's acceptance of you know, Rand's proposal, especially with when he did that. And I'm trying to remember if Rand actually knew that, or if he just was trying to do something to just kind of I don't want to say show off, but kind of show off.
Yeah, I think that he was just trying to look
the Dragon
like,
Reborn.
Just like mysterious and amazing, and that because good things were happening around him, like plants growing and the sun shining. I think that the sun shining was an act of the pattern mm-hmm. because there's also the reaction that Elaine said that she had a tendency to, even if Rand was not around her, the sun would be shining a little bit. So it was suggested that maybe because of, one, her bond with Rand, and two, the fact that she was pregnant with his children mm-hmm. caused her to have some of his, I guess, Tavirin energy.
We'll call it that, sure.
Tavirin energy. Heard it here Tavirin first.
Energy. And then we get served a notice by Robert Jordan's estate. Please do not. Okay, fine. Now, in talking about,
we've been talking
now in talking about omens, though, there are also certain actions that would bring a certain result about. So it's not just seeing certain things, it's actually doing certain things. So one thing is, you know, putting a hat on the table. Now in the South, that'll get you slapped. But in Seanchan, it means extremely bad luck, evil of which is warded off by a hand gesture involving folding under the middle two fingers and extending the other two stiffly. So,
which is actually a so nowadays we use it because like people who listen to metal music use it, but back in the day, it used to be a symbol of warding off evil. Because it's like the sign of the devil and it was supposed to ward off evil.
Hmm. I don't think I knew that either.
And then whenever people started doing metal music, they thought it just looked cool. And they stole it.
So then Robert Jordan stole it back and gave it to the Seanchan.
I think that Robert Jordan just spent a lot of time researching different cultures. Oh, for sure. And I love the way that he blends different cultures together. And I'm just like, oh, I can, because it was in the UK, the United Kingdom, mm-hmm. Great Britain, that they use the two fingers extended and the two middle fingers folded for warding off evil. So that's very British. And then there's the, like I said earlier, the owl hooting is a very South Texas mm-hmm. thing.
I think I've heard it from someone around here in this, you know, I'm over in Alabama. So Southerners still have a few superstitions.
Yeah, just Southern United States.
Well, I mean, there's some, you know, I've heard my grandmother and other, especially elderly people around here in the South, you know, they'll tell you a superstition, but you'll say something and they'll say, oh, that means something, someone's coming to see you or something's going to happen to you, blah, blah, blah. And I'm just like, well, where'd you get that? And they're just like, oh, it's just an old wives' tale or it's just a old superstition. Don't worry about it, bud. You know, they just talk about it. They just know about it because when they grew up, they were taught those things. So putting it, so you don't put a hat on a table, and also don't clear a spider web out before shooing the spider away. In other words, get rid of the spider first, and then get rid of the web. Because if you don't, this is pretty harsh. This will result in the death of someone close to you within a month, and even seeing a torn spider web with the spider still in it will require the hand signals to ward off evil. So. Two things you don't do as Seanchan so far. You don't put your hat on a table and you don't clear out a spider web before you get rid of the spider.
Which I think is just polite at least.
Hey, Mr. Spider, here's my hand. Crawl into my hand. Let me take you outside and I'm going to destroy your home. Okay. All right. I'm going to escort you outside and I'm going to destroy your home. Okay. Another action we have here.
You can make a new one.
Another action we have here is also has to do with small critters, blocking a line of ants in the middle and counting the seconds. So in other words, you know, if there's a line of ants and you block them in the middle and then you start counting, and then apparently the time it takes for the ants to regroup tell how many days of fair weather before a storm is to come. Man, they're just all about seeing stuff, aren't they?
And these past two are extremely specific. Like the result of the death of someone close to you within a month.
Stupid specific.
That's extremely specific.
And then of course it's like, oh, it took them 10 seconds to regroup. Oh, well, we'll have 10 more days of fair weather and then there's going to be a storm. I mean.
And they actually have an argument about it because Matt's like, oh, I thought that you said that we were going to have good weather for a few more days, and Tuan just goes, well, Solution must have miscounted. Like, they full-on believe.
They sure do. And it's interesting that we bring up the fact that in the southern United States, there's a lot of superstition when that's technically that's the region where Robert Jordan was from and where he was when he wrote these books, presumably. You know, he was in Charleston, South Carolina. I mean, that's the South, y'all. I mean, that's, you know, that's pretty South. I mean, I live further south than that, and then Thorns over in Texas, that's a whole different animal. But yeehaw. Wow. Anyway, but yeah, but you, the superstitions that we're discussing here, in because we've seen some of these, and I want to say when I was reading some of the books and kind of coming across these omens and these superstitions, I had this thought in the back of my head, like I've heard that somewhere before. And sitting here discussing it now, I'm starting to think, ah, more than likely it was because I probably heard my grandmother or another elderly person around here, you know, say something like that, because that's the kind of stuff they were about. So, but transitioning to one final thing, I think would be interesting to discuss, and we kind of briefly discuss it real quick, is we mentioned it last week a little bit, and then we briefly mentioned it already here on this episode tonight, but another unique thing about the Shan Chan is the fact that they actually employ these very unique animals that they have on their continent. A lot of them, that we're about to go through a few of them, a lot of them are evolved forms of creatures brought back from parallel worlds via the portal stones during the first 1,000 years after the breaking of the world, which is pretty crazy. The first time we actually see any one of these creatures, I believe we see a Grom whenever Ran goes through the portal stone in the Great Hunt. Am I remembering that correctly, Thorn?
Yes, I believe it was a Grom, because Lanfear told Rand
went Lanfear at that time.
Lanfear was at the time she was going by Selene.
Which as soon as she showed up, I'm just going to be real. When she showed up in the book, I'm like, I don't trust her. I don't trust her. Who's this chick? Like I don't trust her.
Mysterious girl who appears in a portal stone and claims that she cannot channel.
Right, bye. So different animals that the Shan Chan use and they have for different things. The most common one we see is the Rocken. Now it's got trying to give you a mental picture. It's got a body that's pretty. It's considerably longer than a horse's. It's about equal in the horse's girth. It's got leathery gray skin. It's huge, powerful wings, and those wings look like. Kind of like a bat's wings.
I think we actually talked about them a little bit last week.
I think we talked about them a smidge, but I kind of want to go into a little bit more detail because there's a couple of different species of Rocken.
That's right. So
kind of recapping on general Rocken, while the Rocken is not used as a weapon, it's often will lash out sometimes with its tail in anger when it's perched on the ground. It normally crouches rather than standing erect, and stands erect only when alarmed or preparing to fly. They're omnivores, but they are content with eating nothing but plants. Now, the main thing that the Shan Chan use these Rocken for are for scouting and or sending messages, and they can fly about 3 to 4 times the speed of a running horse, and they can actually be ridden up until the point that they die. So they're pretty versatile when it comes to getting you across long distances, and they're great for scouting missions and things like that. I mean, these are very much staples in the Shan, especially with the Shan Chan military. They very much depend on Rocken. Now,
it doesn't say this, but they're also sometimes used for toe Rocken, or I'm not sure if they have a separate section for toe Rocken here, but they're used for they are used for carrying things. I think they're a little bit bigger than regular
like,
Rocken.
So a Rocken would be more like a I'm trying to think of like a real world equivalent here. So a Rocken would be like a high flying type of like scout plane or like a helicopter, and then a yes. Tow Rocken would be more akin to a cargo plane, and they could hold people yes. and or things. They were transport animals. It's basically what they were. They were like, you know, basically beasts of burden for the sky, so to speak. And you would call the Shan Chan pilot, if you will, of these animals a Morat Rocken. and they about 3 out of 4 more out rocking are women.
Which makes a lot of sense because women tend to be smaller than men. Mm-hmm. And for flying especially, you need as little weight as possible.
So it does make a lot of sense. The lighter you are, the better you can navigate with a rocking. Now, we mentioned a Grom a minute ago, first sighted in the parallel world that Rand visits in, I think it was the first half of the Great Hunt after he meets Selene, who is later revealed to be Lanfear. These things weigh about 300 to 500 pounds and they're the size of bears, like large bears. And they have this like gray green skin color, and the texture of their skin is like a very tough frog. So I'm thinking skin of frogs, basically.
So they're like three-eyed frogs.
Yeah.
That are giant.
Yeah, they've got three eyes. They're apparently carnivorous scavengers, and they've been known to eat their own dead. So gross. Now, when they're walking, they appear kind of awkward. They move with like a waddling motion, and all traces of that awkwardness vanish when they start running. So the Seanchan use these in battle, though they normally only against lightly armored opponents to break holes in the enemy line. Then they will be quickly exploited by human soldiers. So in other words, they're used to basically break the enemy line. That's what their purpose is. They're very useful against cavalry, as horses often panic in their presence unless specifically trained to tolerate the Grom, which I would imagine the majority of horses don't tolerate Grom. I imagine the majority of them freak out.
Especially in
absolutely. Rand it's land. Like, what is that? And just start freaking out, which people would see that and start freaking out. I mean, animal you didn't know existed, and there it is.
I can see maybe like Mandarb or a borderland horse not freaking out since they've been trained to withstand shadow spawn. They probably wouldn't freak out as much. They would probably do as they're trained. But any other horse, no.
Now, the Grom are pretty hard to kill, given that non-fatal wounds seldom incapacitate them, and they can heal pretty quick. So apparently the best way to kill one of them is to shoot it directly in the third eye, which is their center eye. So they have these triangular-looking heads, and they've got three eyes, and one of the eyes is centered in the head, and in the center of the head. And the best way to kill it is to shoot that eye. And they also have pretty good vision, keen sense of smell, and they're very, very, very territorial. So these things are... I should be real with you. When I think of them, they make me think of just, I think bear frog. Like, that's.
I'm thinking of just like a frog, but it's like really pissed off and it's got its like throat thing like out all the time. The image that's coming
out. Well, I would freak out too if there's a giant pissed off frog running from my battle line. I don't know what I would do with that either. I'm just going to be honest. It's like, oh my God. That is the largest, most pissed off amphibian I've ever seen in my life. I think I need to run. I'm going to run. Are you guys going to run? Because I'm going to run.
I actually wonder if they can swim, because it does not say.
I wouldn't be surprised, especially if they're – yeah, I wouldn't be surprised. So a couple of other animals real quick that have some pretty specific uses. So a torm. It's a cross between a horse-sized cat and a lizard. There's a visual. A horse-sized cat, so...
Cat snake. Shout-out to Joffy, sorry.
A horse-sized cat and a lizard has got bronze scales, six clawed feet that can grip stones in a road, and, oh, here it is, three eyes. Three-eyed joker here.
Yes, it actually mentions in the Grom section.
A Torm has three eyes, yeah. Now, it says that the Torm is the most intelligent of the Seanchan creatures, being well above that of a very bright dog, and can come close to human levels in certain areas of problem solving, such as maze tests. That's terrifying. That is terrifying. A horse-sized cat lizard is as smart as me. That's terrifying to me.
Wait, wouldn't a cat lizard be just a, they're really cute, fluffy. My brain is dying on the animal that I'm thinking of.
I'm not getting cute off of this thing, though. Like, it's got scales. Scales aren't really cute to me. You know, most reptiles are not what I would call cute. Some can be, but this thing is one of the most intelligent of the Shan Chan creatures for all the reasons I just mentioned. Now, it's apparently a riding animal, and as a riding animal, their speed and endurance are superior to that of a horse, but they're particular about their riders. So once the creature, once the Torm has found its rider, the Torm will not allow another to mount them. If its rider dies, it basically has to get over their other rider before it accepts a different rider. So basically there is a bond of sorts that's formed. The Torm actually bonds with a rider, and then when the rider is gone, goes, I guess, through a period of mourning, and then will select another rider. Now, if the Torm actually can suffer from fighting frenzy if it's in battle for too long. It rarely turns on its rider during one of those times, but it will strike at anyone within reach. So in other words, when these things start going to a frenzy, it's not going to turn on their rider necessarily, but if another Shan Chan soldier is in front of them or anyone is near them, they will lash out at them. They will also immediately attack any Corum, which is an animal. It's like a large flightless bird. Honestly, it reminds me of like a weird looking penguin. But they will especially attack any of those within reach, making them additionally unsuitable for protracted combat. So they're not widely available.
Actually, a Corum is described similar to an ostrich.
That's not much better.
Although, did you know that you can ride ostriches?
What?
I went to a Renaissance festival once, and they were actually offering ostrich rides. And it had a saddle.
You know? Pass. That's a hard pass on that. Thanks. I don't know if I want to ride on something that may immediately decide to stick its head in the ground while I'm on its back. No, thank you. And then, so, go ahead.
I think you're thinking of, do ostriches
stick? Yeah, or am I thinking of something different?
Oh, sorry. I remember now what Torm slightly might remind me of because of a joke, a meme about cat snakes.
Cat snakes.
Ferrets.
Ferrets. Oh, that is terrifying. Oh, that is worse than what I was picturing. Ferret. That is terrifying. Hi, guys. I have a giant ferret that's smarter than my dog. Come meet him. No. Absolutely not. No, sir.
I've spent this entire time. The reason I've been so quiet is because I've been Googling cat snake.
Oh, my God.
Until I found the word ferret.
So one more animal to go. I believe this is pronounced Sreddit. Sreddit. They are war animals. They're massive with thick gray skin. The bull Sreddit. That's how I'm going to say it. Don't at me. They have long tusks, but they are used mostly as large cargo animals. They're often called by different names in other lands, but those of us who have read the books and have gotten this far knows that they are part of the menagerie that belongs to Valen Luca. And he calls them giant boar horses to make them more pronounceable and a little more interesting. To us, probably they are most related to an elephant. So they probably look a little more like an elephant than anything else. So they're basically they're war animals, but their main purpose is not necessarily a fence. They are mostly used for transport and for cargo. And we do see a Shan Chan woman, I'm forgetting her name right now, but a Shan Chan woman who was traveling with Valen Luca's menagerie. And she did have, I think she had a couple of these that she would perform with in the show for Luca. And I remember that being something that our favorite characters, Elaine and her crew that were going through that area at that time, they would speak to Luca about, and they were speaking to this woman.
It was actually a Geenan who had this.
It was a Geenan. It was a Geenan. God, Greg, remember things.
Yes, because
it was a Geenan. Of course, it was a. Of course, it was a Geenan. Who else would it be? But yeah, so we've seen a bunch of these different animals in various places, and again, most of them are connected to Shan Chan, specifically Shan Chan military. But we do see some of them in other places occasionally. Again, you know, the Grom and the parallel world. Wow, that. Rand visits, and then of course the Sereddit in the menagerie. So we've seen them, these animals, in a couple of different places. So
I actually think that they were just, I don't think that they were in the alternate world. I think the only creatures that we saw in the alternate world,
right, that's
were
what
the
I meant.
Grom.
I was saying the Sereddit were in the menagerie, right?
Yes. Oh, you're saying the animals, yeah, in general.
Yeah, I was just trying, sorry, to remember where we saw, if we saw any of these animals in another context other than part of the Shan Chan military. And those are the only two that we can think of.
Well, we did see Lopar. What is her name? Somebody's going to at me now. The Shan Chan lady who was there before Tuon. Who was leading before Tuon. Saroth, there we go. She has a pet Lopar.
So I think we skipped over that one. That is actually the main combat animal of the Shan Chan. So to try to put a picture in your head of that, its average weight is between 1,500 and 2,000 pounds, with a leathery, hairless hide, which is a dark brown or pale reddish hue. They have six toes on both front and rear paws, and they have large retractable claws. They have no visible external ears. I take it back. This thing's more terrifying than the giant ferret, like than the Torm. Way more terrifying.
My brain is imagining, what my brain is imagining with the Lopar is a sphinx cat with
terrifying.
No ears.
That's terrifying. They sometimes rear up on their hind legs when they're fighting, and they can reach as high as 10 feet. They are also armored, similar to the style the Shan Chan soldiers use. In other words, these are the war animals that they ride into battle. And I'm just like, no thanks. Nope, I don't want to see what you just described, Thorn. That's just, that's absolutely terrifying to me. That is just, that's a nope. That's a, hey, Greg, go fight this. And it's a, nope. Nope. Shoot me for a deserter. I'm done. I'm not going up against that thing. Nope. Absolutely not. It's not happening. I want to know when I go into a battle that I have a chance, and I had no chance with that thing. Do you see that thing? That's a fucking alien.
But
no.
You can understand. You can totally understand why people in Randland think that Shan Chan animals are shadow spawn.
Well, yeah, I absolutely do, especially the Rockan, because the only thing they've seen in the fly that looks like a Rockan is a Drakkar.
Yeah, so basically you've got this weird, basically, Wyrmwen that kind of looks like a Drakkar. You've got a giant frog creature that eat their own dead. You've got a scary giant bird, a sphinx cat with no ears, a giant ferret, and an elephant.
Ladies and gentlemen, Valen and Luca's Menagerie of Nightmares. Well, I think as far as a kind of an overview of the Shan Chan, I think we've pretty much hit the main things between this episode and last episode. We definitely, just the main thing we want to get across in this episode is, you know, we wanted to discuss the One Power in Shan Chan a little more deeply, although discussing these animals has been both fun and terrifying nightmare fuel. And I am going to go to bed tonight trying to get it out of my head. Thanks for that. You know, and now I need to make a now I need to make a shirt that says Vale and Luca's Nightmare Menagerie, and just need to have all these different freaky Sean Chan creatures all over the shirt. And I think we could sell it to all the Twitter of Time people and they'd buy it. So, you know, if you're listening to this and you want a Vale and Luca Nightmare Menagerie t-shirt, you can at us. That's the only time it's appropriate. You can add us at that.
I'll make it.
But I think that's about all we've got for tonight. Thorne, do you have any final comments?
No, I think we pretty much covered everything that we wanted to.
That sounds great. So, in other words, just kind of end this awkwardly. Tune in next week. We don't know what we're going to talk about yet. Aaron may want to edit that part out, but I'm going to see if he leaves it in because he's cool and leaves the funny stuff in. So, until next time, I'm Greg.
And I'm Thorne. Oh, hold on. We need to
Twitter handles. Twitter handles. Right. Self-promotion. I'm bad at self-promotion. That's why I forget.
Self-promotion and also promoting the Twitter for Black Tower Podcast. Thing.
Obviously, we've got to promote the Black Tower Podcast because that is this podcast that we're currently doing things on right now.
So if you want to add us at Black Tower Podcast – or I think it's, or it might be Black Tower Pod. Tower Pod. Or it's
pretty easy.
Or you can email. You can email Black Tower Pod.
You can also join the Discord. Me and Thorne, yes, are always in the Discord. And if you add us in there, we might actually respond to you. It depends. It depends on if we.
If I'm asleep, true. I'm not responding.
Very true. Sleep is important. But yes, please check out the Twitter, Black Tower Pod. And then, of course, if you want to follow mine and Thorne's personal accounts, Thorne is at Thorne Fireheart. And I, as the character account for Randall Thor the Dragon Reborn, at the Dragon Reborn 2. You will find me. I think right now I'm in conversation with Elaine Trecan because she is singing a song and has dedicated it to my character. How sweet. So go get on that action. And which we're recording this on Tuesday night. So by the time you guys hear this, you probably won't see it. But Wheel of Time Dance Party is always great. So but check us out on social media. And until next time, I'm Greg.
I'm Thorne.
And this has been the Black Tower Podcast.
Bye. Oh, shoot, I didn't prepare for this. from this point forward, there will be spoilers for the entire Wheel of Time. I'm sorry. My brain just... I should have prepared better.
That's okay.
I'm not good at winning things like this. We've got spoilers. Don't edit this out. Or Thorne's bad at this. I almost said my real name.
It's all unraveling right here. We didn't even make it two episodes. Right here is where we can mark the death of our run on the Black Tower Podcast. Right here with a spoiler warning. Cheers, mate.
Okay. Maybe we should cut this out. Okay. I'm going to take a deep breath and try again.
Let's do it.